Good afternoon. So last time we talked about accessing devices. We mentioned we had a way of representing the devices like keyboards, network things, and so on. And so we could, for example, open a special file and write to it, and rather than storing data somewhere, it would play audio. We can open a special file and read from it, and rather than returning some prior stored data, it would give us like recent mouse movements. And we had part of the kernel, the device driver, implementing this interface. And we had sort of two pieces to that. We had this top half where it handled reading or writing for the device file. That when we called read or write, that would end up in this top half code. And typically, the main thing that code would do is it would consult some internal kernel buffer that held data that for reading was transferred from the device but not yet sent to an application, or for writing, which was transferred from an application but not yet sent to the device. And if needed, we might in some cases need to set things up for later. So for example, we might need to start sending data to the device, or make sure the device knows we want to do that. But for the most part, we're not actually doing most of the interaction with the device in this top half. And we have this bottom half, which is triggered by exceptions from the device. So the device is going to tell us, oh, I'm ready for more input. Or, oh, I have something for the kernel to get. And typically, we just copy in this bottom half from the kernel buffer to the device, or vice versa. Or if we had direct memory access, the device would do that copy, and in either case, we'd have to deal with, oh, am I ready to wake up some program that's waiting to read or write from this device? Do I have, stuff ready for output? Can I give it the next part of the stuff to write, and so on? We do whatever needs to be done in response to the event from the device, being like, oh, I have some data for you, or oh, I'm ready for more data. Something like that. That action would happen in this bottom half. So questions on those things we covered last time? Okay. So today we're going to talk about, yes, sorry. I put mouse movements because this kind of doesn't correspond with key presses. Other questions? Yes. What does DMA stand for? This is direct memory access. So remember, we said that devices could talk to memory directly rather than having us have them, rather than copying from their buffer to the kernel buffer, we could have the devices go directly to some kernel buffer. Does that answer your question? Other questions? Okay. So we're going to talk about how disks that store data work. So to talk about this, we're going to have to deal with the interface that exists between the operating system and disks. And this is, not the same as sort of the interface we have for files. So our disk, our hard drive, or a solid-state disk is going to take read or write requests, and those requests are going to be in the terms of sectors. So sectors is some bunch of bytes, and that's going to be the minimum unit that we can read or write from a disk in. And typical sector sizes are going to be on the order of kilobytes. And the disk is going to give each sector it has a number. If it's a spinning disk, probably sectors with numbers that are close by or physically close by. On an SSD, this isn't really meaningful. But we have sector numbers for each this bunch of data the bytes can store, and we're going to ask to read some of those or write some of those in our requests. Typically, we can send lots of requests to the device, and it will have some sort of queue of requests that it manages. And we can also specify things like, oh, I want you to write X before Y when we're sending, say, I want you to, write this, then write this. It'll say, I want you to read all these things, and that's sort of the interface we're going to have to the device. Now, notably, these sector numbers, well, they're not how we actually interact with the disk as a user. We use like file names, and we have these files which are variable sized. So there's going to be some translation and some bookkeeping to make those file names work, and that's a file system. We're going to talk about how that works built on top of this interface. Some questions about the OS to disk interface before we talk about sort of our simple file system example we'll start with. Okay, so we're going to look at file systems, and we're going to go through in detail the example of the FAT file system. We're choosing this because it's probably the simplest of file systems that are widely used. And it's named after its most important data structure, which is called the file allocation table. And we all have an upcoming homework where you're going to implement the reading part of the FAT file system sort of on a file on disk that represents the contents of a hypothetical disk. So FAT divides the disk into clusters. You may say, you just said sectors are the bunch of data in our disk. Why am I using the word cluster instead? And clusters can be composed of multiple sectors. So sectors are the unit the hardware can read or write in. And when we're making a file system, often we aren't happy with that size. And in particular, you know, often that size is pretty small. Historically, it was often half a kilobyte. And we really want to work in bigger chunks. So FAT decided that we're going to have a cluster size which can be bigger than that. And that's the unit that they're going to work in, even though when they're talking to the disk, they're going to need to translate that into sectors. And you know, they're always going to be working with multiple sectors at a time. So a cluster, typically 512 to bytes to 4K. The size is configurable, which is why I don't have a definite number. So we're going to divide the disk into clusters. And here I've shown the cluster sort of numbered from 0 and onward. They may or may not be, they won't actually be numbered quite that way in the real full file system. We'll have that for our examples. We'll just say, assume cluster 0 starts at the beginning of the disk, just for simplicity. So we have these clusters we divided the disk into, and we're going to store files, which aren't going to take up the whole disk. So what we're going to do is we're going to assign a file to a bunch of clusters. And remember, clusters, you know, can contain multiple sectors, and that's fine. There'll always be a whole number of sectors, but multiple sectors. So let's say I have a file, and I need to store, and it's bigger than a cluster, so I'm going to fit it in multiple clusters. And I'm going to assign a list of clusters to the file. And so I might say example.txt, it needs the space of four clusters, so I'm going to put it in clusters 10, 13, 14, and 15. So I'm going to split its data among those clusters. You might say, what if the file doesn't take up a whole cluster? Well, we're just going to use part of one of those clusters for the end of the file and waste some space. We're never going to do something where we assign two files to the same cluster. We're always going to have each cluster reserved for a single file, even if it can't use the whole thing, even though that wastes space. And this means that if we want to read this example.txt, we need some way of obtaining the list of clusters, 10, 13, 14, 15. So that needs to be stored somewhere. And the way FAT has chosen to store this is a linked list. So we're going to have a head pointer we're going to get from somewhere. We'll talk about where that comes from later. And then we're going to follow some next pointers to get the other parts of the file. And our linked list is going to be stored in the file allocation table, which is going to be a big array with one entry per cluster. And it's going to contain a value, which is our next pointers for our linked list. And because this is a linked list on disk, we're not going to have memory addresses. These things aren't in memory. So our next pointers are just going to be the indices of the next cluster. So when we want to read a file, we're going to have a starting first cluster of the file. So in this example, let's say that's 10. And I'm going to use my linked list of cluster numbers. Oh, I forgot to. This is not shown here, so. So here in this example, I say 10, the clusters of the file is, we have 10, and I look at 10, and I see, oh, it points to 14, so it gets then 14, and I look at 14, and I say, okay, now there's the entry for 14, it points to 15, so then I have 15, I look at 15, it points to 13, and 13 has some special value indicating end of the file. That is the last cluster. So then I know the list of clusters that contain the data for this file is 10, 14, 15, 13. Some questions? This works. So the data is not actually in the file allocation table. The file allocation table is just the next pointers, because the clusters themselves are just going to store the file's data and nothing else. Yes?
File allocation table, this linked list containing the indices of like a contiguous cluster composing a file.
So the question, the file allocation table has a linked list containing the indices of the clusters composing a file? Yes, they would. Yeah, and we store that linked list as an array of next pointers, where we look, the index we look in is what cluster it's for. Other questions? Yeah.
So is the file allocation table like a file?
The question is, where is this stored on the disk? And what we're going to do is we're going to put it somewhere near the beginning of the disk. I'll talk about exactly how we figure out where that location is later. But somewhere near the beginning of this, we're just going to have this stored using however many clusters it needs, depending on how big, how many clusters there are. Okay. Other questions? Okay. So this file allocation table, it's going to show us that, you know, it's going to represent files. So we're going to say, oh, if we know that a file starts at cluster 7, based on these entries in the file allocation table, it must use clusters 7 through 9 in that order. If I know that a file starts at cluster 10, it must use cluster 10, then 14, then 15, then 13 in that order. And so on. So we can use this file allocation table stored in a separate part to figure out where the data is for a file, assuming we know where the file starts. Okay. So that means our process of reading a file is we get its start location from somewhere, we go read the starting cluster, then we go to the FAT to figure out where's the next cluster, if there is one. We go to that location to read the next part of the data, then we go to the FAT to say, is there yet another cluster? And we keep doing that until eventually in the FAT we see this end marking value that indicates there's no more clusters. Some questions about this reading process before we talk about where do these start locations come from? So we have start locations. And we're used to using file names. So hypothetically, I could just say, OK, the way you're going to access a file is you're going to memorize in your head what the cluster number is. And when you want to like edit test.c, you're not going to write test.c. You're going to say 15. I want to edit 15. But you probably don't like that. You probably want to have file names. And we need to store those file names somewhere. And we're going to store them in directories. So we're going to represent directories somehow. And how are, what are directories going to be? So we're going to store directories the same way we store files. So directories are files where rather than containing some data we're storing, they contain a list of what we'll call directory entries. And the directory entries is going to tell us the name of the file, where it starts, and some other data about the file. So we'll have our directory, it's going to be a file, and just like a file, the data for a directory might be stored in multiple clusters. So we'll have, in this example, I have two clusters that make up my directory, and the contents of it is not data, but directory entries. And for example, this first directory entry says, oh, there's a file named index.html in this directory, and it starts at cluster 10, and it's about 13,000 bytes long. So using that directory entry, I say, oh, let's look at cluster 10. And I'm going to go to my final location table and figure out if I have a file that starts at cluster 10, where is it actually stored? And let's say I find out it's stored in clusters 10, 11, 15, and 16. In that case, I'm going to know that these clusters, if they're linked together in order, you know, we have the first part of the file. In this example, I'm assuming clusters are 4 kilobytes. So the first 4K of the file, the second 4K, the third 4K, and what's left over, which doesn't use a whole cluster, but we're going to waste just the last part of the space of the cluster because we don't have any other way of allocating space for the file. So when I want to access index.html, if I know where this directory is, I'm just going to scan until I find the matching directory entry, go to that starting cluster, and then I know where the data is. And I also know to ignore the unused bytes at the end because of the size in the directory entry. Questions? Yes? So question, they're all in the same disk?
Do they all, given a bunch of clusters, they use that same cluster?
Question, given a bunch of clusters, they use the same...
Those clusters.
So each file or directory, so each cluster is only going to be used by one file or directory. And you see that in this example, they're either used, in this case, I have one file and one directory I'm showing. Either the cluster is used for the directory or it's used for the file, not both. What, sorry?
Just one set of clusters.
So just one set of clusters for what?
For directories and files.
So question, just one set of clusters for directories and files? So all file, each file, has a set of clusters associated with it. And for this purpose, directories are also files. So each directory, like other files, has a set of clusters associated with it. And it just happens for directories, rather than storing, like, HTML, we're storing these directory entries. Does that answer your question? Okay, so let's look at, So let's look at the format of a directory entry. I forgot to put a byte in here. Which is not important. So our directory entries, in fact, have this format. There's some historical mistakes in here because the FAT format was invented in like the 80s when they thought we didn't need some things. So what we have are important things here. We have our cluster number. It happens to be split into two parts because originally they had 16-bit cluster numbers. Then they realized, wait a moment, disks are getting big. We probably need bigger than that. So they added another 16 bits. They have a file name, and they support an 8-character file name and a 3-character extension. Now, if you've used the FAT file system before, you've probably said, oh, I have files that aren't named like that. And those are supported via extra directory entries, which have a special attributes value. For our assignment, we're not going to support those, so we're not going to care about them. And it's not especially interesting, the sort of tricks they did to deal with forgetting to have enough space in here. So for the assignment, we're just going to deal with these 8+3-character file names, where we have an 8-character file name. Notice that here the file name is README, and it's padded with spaces. And we have the extension, which happens to be 3 characters. If we didn't have an extension, we can't use those last 3 characters for anything else. They're always an extension. So if we had no extension, we just leave it as spaces. But we can't make a file name that's 9 characters and no extension. Not an option. Okay. And we also have this attributes flag. So we have some metadata about the file. And the most important thing here is that this indicates whether it's a directory or not. So this is how we find out if something a directory or a regular file. We look at that attributes flag and say it tells us yes, it's a directory, or no, it's not. And there's also some other information in there, like marking files as read-only and things like that. Other functionality the operating system might want to know about what files are being used for. And we have, we also have a size here. So that size we mentioned earlier, we have stored as this 3-byte value here. And in addition, most of the other stuff here is various times when things were modified and so on that we also track. So you can like list them from LS. There's one other thing that we need to deal with, which is that sometimes when we're storing directories, we need to know when there's no more directory entries to look at. So, you know, if I'm looking for foo.html and it's not there, I'm going to need to check every single directory entry. And I'd like to know when to stop so I don't check a bunch of things that aren't filled in yet. And the way we indicate that is we're going to just put a 0 byte in the first character of the file name, and that's going to say, this is the last directory entry. There's nothing more here to look at. Also, sometimes when we delete a file, we want to not have to move around all the directory entries in the directory. So we'll just overwrite one directory entry to indicate it's unused. The way that's done is we put the byte E5 in hex here to indicate that this is a directory entry that was overwritten because a file was deleted. And you should ignore it. Okay. So questions? Format? Yes. Question is what are the characters here and here? That's a space character. I'm just indicating explicitly. The question is we have these space characters that need to be stored in the directory entry. Who's responsible for putting them there? So the operating system, when you like open readme.txt, it is responsible for doing the translation of knowing, oh, I need to add some space padding because that's how the file system is designed. So it's responsible for doing that, and on the assignment, you will be because you'll be implementing that type of open function. Or you'll need to do that translation where the program specifies readme.txt without those spaces, and you need to figure out that this is what it means. That answer your question? And this commonly comes up just because, you know, file systems are not designed with any particular OS's interface in mind, right? Usually. Yes? Question is this directory entry per cluster? So this is per file. So in this case, readme.txt has this directory entry, no matter how long it is, no matter how many clusters it takes up. Does that answer your question?
And also, why do we split cluster high and low bits? Why not just
the question is, why is the cluster high and low bit split? It's just history. An older version of FAT only had the low bits. And they realized they needed more, but they had other things in the wrong location to put it next to the low bits. Okay. Other questions? Yeah. Question is there between the zero and the attributes that I wrote down? There's a field I forgot, which is basically not used. They're two separate things. And I'll go on the next slide. We'll have a very explicit picture of what things look like. Other questions? Okay, so I sort of shown you the format. And we want to deal with this from like C code. And the most common sort of way of doing this is that we're going to define a struct that matches how things are laid out on disk. And I can very carefully write the struct. So rather than needing to like copy each field separately, I can just copy from disk into memory exactly as is, and things will match up with my struct. To do this, I needed to be careful. So one thing I'm going to do is you see this GCC and Clang extension here I'm using to mark it as pat. And what that does is that tells the compiler, do not add padding. The compiler normally wants to do things like make sure a 32-bit integer is, you know, at an address that's a multiple of 32. We're saying, don't do that. I need this to be exactly as I wrote it, even if that puts things at locations that aren't going to perform very well because of like being split up among pages or things like that. I need it exactly the way it is. No padding, don't add any extra space, just to make things faster, because it needs to match what's on disk. And I have a whole bunch of types here, which are explicitly sized. So uint8t is always exactly 8 bits, it's always 1 byte. uint16t is always 16 bits, saying I want to use that size, I don't care that a 32-bit integer might be faster, because it needs to match what's on disk. I also need to worry about endianness. It happens that FAT does everything in little endian, And we're just going to assume for the assignment that we're working in little endian, so you don't have to worry about that. But real OSs do actually have to have code to handle file systems that assume little or big endian in storage and have to translate. Okay. And you might say, why did you choose these horrible names? Like, couldn't we spell out create instead of writing CRT? And we could have. I'm matching the Microsoft documentation that we're going to point you to for the assignment. I figure it's probably more valuable to match that documentation than to choose nice, easily writable names for everything. Some questions sort of about mapping our directory entry to a struct. And sort of by doing this, the idea is I could just copy bytes from what I read from the disk into this struct, and then I can access all the fields that way. I don't need to like manually decode it. It's all done when I made the, carefully wrote this struct. Okay, so we know how directory entries work. And what that means is that when I have a path like foo/bar/baz/file.txt, how do I access that? Well, first, I'm going to read the root directory, whatever the first directory is, where to find foo. So I'm going to go through all those directory entries. I'm going to check, is the name match foo? If so, I'm going to say, there it is. And once I find that, I'm going to know where foo's directories are. How do I know? The directory entry gives me a pointer to the first cluster. I look in the first cluster, get those directory entries. If I don't find what I'm looking for there, I go to the fat, see if there's a next cluster, get those directory entries, keep going until I find a directory entry for bar. And then I repeat the same process with that directory entry. So I go to bar's directory entries, look for something for baz, and so on, until I get to file.txt. And then I find out where file.txt is, and I can access its data. Some questions? Yes. How fast is this? So if we actually had to go through this whole process every time, not very fast. In practice, we're going to have help from, well, one thing is like the page cache, right? That hopefully all these accesses don't actually access the disk. They're accessing cache copies of things in memory. Another thing is that operating systems might have special caches for like where foo/bar/baz/file.txt is. And for example, Linux has a cache of the results of lookups like that to speed that up. That answer your question? Other questions? Yeah. Can I explain how I find bar and foo's directory entries? So when I get the directory entry for foo, the entry is like saying FOO, right? And it has the cluster number of foo. So I'm going to go to that cluster number. And in that cluster is going to be more directory entries, right? Because this is the data for foo. And then there's going to be a chain of them. I'm going to figure out that chain using the fat, right? And one of these might have bar as its name. And that's what I'm looking for. Does that answer your question?
Yeah.
Yes.
So could we analogize the cluster number to a pointer that points to another array?
Can I analogize the cluster number as a pointer that points to another array? Yeah, you can think of it like that, where the entries in that array are, you know, multiple kilobytes of data usually. Does that answer your question? Other questions? Okay. So we have our directory lookup process. We have this sort of recursive structure that of the lookup that kind of matches the recursive structure we are used to for files and directories. But we have this first step that I kind of glossed over, which is we need a root directory. So we need to find the first directory. So how are we going to do that? And what we're going to do is we're going to store global information about things like where the first directory in the file system is and what we'll call the file system header. So at the beginning of the disk, we're going to store general information about the file system. This is going to include what is our current setting for how big clusters are. We're going to store that there. We're going to also have to know where the file allocation table is, and this is where we're going to store that information. So what FAT has chosen to do is there's a number of reserve sectors, and after that is the file allocation table. So that's how we know where the file allocation table is. And we're going to store also the size of the file allocation table in sectors. This is in sectors, that's why it doesn't match. It's not three clusters, it's 11 sectors. And also we're going to store the first cluster of the root directory. And this, you know, here it's near the beginning of the disk. I could have put the first cluster of the root directory anywhere in any of the cluster numbers. But, you know, I just chose to put it kind of near the beginning of the disk, as might be typical. And that's where I'm going to start looking for directory entries for that first step, and our example looking for food. Some questions about this idea of having our header. So this is where we just store our global information about this disk and what we're storing in it. Yes? What is the reserve sectors? So there's some space at the beginning of the disk that's used for the header and possibly other information. And after that is where the fat starts.
Does that 5 correspond to the...
So on this diagram, that 5 corresponds to the space from here to here. And it's more, it's one in the sector and change because our sectors are four our clusters are 4 sectors. So it's one cluster and change because 5 is... one cluster plus a little extra. And this could vary between disks. This is some, so this header is something we'll set up when we format a disk, when we set up a disk to be used. Yes? Can I explain number of fats? Yes. So something that is a concern when dealing with especially spinning disks is that there's sometimes they fail. And a common way, especially spinning disks fail, is that just one part of the disk will fail. And it would be really annoying if we had a failure right here, where just part of the disk failed, where despite a very small part of the disk failing, we would have trouble accessing a whole lot of data, because we're missing all the information about next clusters for a big portion of the disk. To avoid this issue, FAT chose to have support having a backup file allocation table, or possibly more than one backup. And the idea is when they modify files, they'll write to both of them. So if we have that sort of disk failure, we can look in the backup and still read those files. And so we can recover, you know, from that data loss with at least not losing like most of the files on the disk. You know, we're still going to probably lose some data if we, especially like, you know, if we lose, you know, that cluster, well, you know, we've lost part of the root directory, but at least we don't want to lose all the file data. And having a backup copy of the file allocation table makes that hopefully less likely, and that's the thought. So that's what the number of fats is how many copies we have just in case of failures. That answer your question? Other questions? Okay, so we have our file system header, and like our directory entries, we can represent this as a nice struct where I've just carefully went through the spec and matched things up so I could just copy from memory into the struct and access things. So we have sort of the size of our sector and cluster and all that other information I showed you earlier. You know, number of fats. There's also an extra like thing indicating generally how many fats, how many backups there are, but which ones are in use, and so on. Okay, so we've learned how sort of reading files work. Let's talk about creating files. So if we want to create a file, we have some steps. We want to add a directory entry to whatever directory it's in. And we also need to store the file's data. So let's talk about that part. You know, if we want to create a file, we need some place to put its data. How do we decide where to do that? And our answer is going to be we're going to reuse the file allocation table for that. So if a cluster isn't being used as part of a linked list, we're going to put a special value, kind of like our endmark, but a different value indicating that it's not in use at all, that it's free. And we can scan for things that are marked as free, and those are places we can put files, you know, were new files or files that were expanding. So, you know, if I have my file allocation table and I want to write a file which needs three clusters, I just find any three entries which are marked as free, and I put my file there, and I update the file allocation table to set up my linked list. So in this example, I decided to write the file to clusters 21, 22, and 24, and therefore I updated the file allocation table to link 21 to 22, 22 to 24, and mark 24 as not a free cluster, but an end cluster. So questions on this process? Yeah?
It's kind of familiar in the lecture, but can the end cluster have file data in it?
Question is, can the end cluster have file data in it? Absolutely. Other questions? Okay. So that's the step of allocating space for the file's data and making it so once we know the starting cluster number, we can actually access it. We also need to write a directory entry for it. And there's two cases for this. So the simple case is that we look in our existing directory and there's some unused space that's all in a cluster the directories already has directory entries in. There's some unused entry either after that end of directory marker or something that was previously deleted. And we can just overwrite that to say, here's new.txt, it starts at cluster 21, it has the size, and so on. And that would be the other part of creating the file. Yes? Question, I said if I didn't use the entire cluster, we have wasted space. Can we use that space? So if the wasted space is here, like in the last cluster of this file, we can't use that because the thing we need to write is part of the directory. It has to be part of the directory. That cluster is always part of this file. Does that answer your question? So if we're wasting space because the file doesn't use all the clusters we allocated for it, we don't really have any option to use that space for anything else because we can't, like, there's no place we can write, please look for more directory entries halfway through this cluster. That's just not supported. There's no way of writing that down. Now, if the directory is only using half of its clusters, well, cluster, we can absolutely start putting other things in that the rest of that cluster. Does that answer your question? So in this example, the directory had some unused entries. Possibly it was half of the cluster wasn't being used, but we had to allocate a whole one. Or possibly there was something that was previously deleted. We can put back something in it in its place. Where by deleted, I meant it was overwritten just to mark it as unused. Now, sometimes this whole cluster might be full, right? It might all be directory entries. In that case, we need to allocate a new cluster to store more directory entries. So in that case, what I'll do is I'll do the same thing we did to allocate space for the file, and I will allocate a new cluster, and I'll fill it up with my new directory entry for new.txt, and also, you know, the rest of the space I can't use. And I also need to set up an entry in my file allocation table to point from the previous part of the directory to the new part. Okay. And you might say, oh, don't I need to update this directory's size? It turns out that the size part of directory entries is only used for regular files. So for directories, we're just going to look at how long the linked list is to figure out how big the directory is. Yes?
Can you have directories point to other directories?
Can I have directories point to other directories? Absolutely. And we saw that with the foo/bar/baz case. Other questions? Okay. Yes?
Assuming the directory entry for a directory is different than the directory entry for a file?
Question, what's the difference between a directory entry for a directory versus for a file? So the differences are going to, the main difference is going to be that we're going to have a different value in this adders field. to indicate that it's directory, not a regular file. The other minor difference is that FAT has chosen not to use the file size field for directories. Does that answer your question? Other questions? Okay, so let's do a little exercise. We'll do the first part here. So we have, I have c.text in B and A. c.text, and let's assume we create c.text as non-empty, just to make things clear. So I'm saying we have c.text in B and A, and I have a bunch of things on the disk that are possibly relevant to this. I have the data clusters for A. Remember, data clusters for a directory store directory entries. I have the data clusters for B and for c.text. I also have FAT entries for A's data clusters, for B's data clusters, and for c.text's clusters. My question is, let's say we create c.text, so did it exist before, as a non-empty file, which of these are going to change? Give you a minute or two. Which of these, I should say, may change? And let's ignore timestamp updates, please. Because if you remember, directory entries had like lots of times, like creation and modification. Let's ignore that, because that's going to make a lot of extra things get updated that we don't really care about. Yes. As we're creating C, so C does not already exist.
So the options above C wouldn't have existing.
C wouldn't previously have those things, yes. So in this example. Okay, so who'd like some more time? Okay, so let's start with F. So who thinks we need to change the data clusters for c.text? in order to create ctxt as a non-empty file. Okay, yes, we need some place to store the non-empty stuff. So we better have our data clusters for c.txt. And so I have a sort of a diagram here, so we're gonna actually write the data of the file somewhere. Thinks we need to change the fat entries for those data clusters. Okay, pretty much everyone. Yeah, so we need to make sure they're not marked as free anymore. And we also need to set up those pointers. Remember, they're sort of pointers for a linked list. So we're setting up those pointers, and that's definitely necessary to create the file. Even if the file only has one cluster, we still need to set up the pointer to end a file, end of the chain, because it can't be free anymore, which is what it previously would be. Okay, so who thinks we modify the data clusters for A? That's item D. No one? Okay. How about the data clusters for B? Okay, everyone. Pretty much. Yeah, so we're going to have a directory entry for C. It's going to be within B's data clusters. So I should use a different color. That's what I was trying to do. So we'll have a directory entry that's going to be our pointer to the beginning of C. And that's going to be in the data clusters of B. So we are going to need to modify that. But how about the fat entry for B's data clusters? Who thinks we may need to modify that? Okay, everyone. So there's two cases. So one case is that maybe we just replace an existing entry, in which case we wouldn't need to do that. But another case is that maybe we ran out of space, we need to make a new cluster, so in that case, we would. So this is going to be maybe for B, depending on whether we need to create a new cluster. And we're not creating a new cluster, I should say, assign a different cluster that was previously free to B in order to store that directory entry for c.txt. I'm going to try to be careful about saying new cluster because some people are confused and think we're expanding the disk. It's not what's happening, right? We already have all the clusters when the disk starts. We're just reassigning them from being free to something else. Okay, how about did we talk about the data clusters for A? Okay, so I think the data clusters for A and the fat entries for A's clusters, we don't need to change those. We might need to change them if you're updating modification times and so on, because we're modifying B, but otherwise we don't need to. Some questions? Yes. Question is, was option F true? F, C, E, and maybe B is the answer I have written down here. So for F, those are the data clusters for C. That's, we have to create that in order to put data in the file. Does that answer your question? Yes. So question, maybe B, why am I saying that? So we need to do B if we need to allocate a new cluster to store more directory entries. If we already had space in one of the prior clusters, we don't need to do that. So we could just overwrite that prior cluster to replace an unused directory entry with one for c.txt. Does that answer your question? Yes.
Why do we not need to modify A?
So A, for the purposes of this, just needs to have our pointer to where B starts, and that's pretty much it. So if this were a regular file, we need to be worried about the size of B. But for directories, as a special case, we don't store the size in the directory entry because we don't really care about the size of the directories. And we already know where the last cluster is from the fat.
Why do we need to modify B again?
Why do we need to modify B? Because B is where we have our pointer to C's beginning in that directory entry. In case E, the data cluster for B, that's B's data is directory entries. And one of those directory entries is going to need to say c.txt starts here. And so that's where we're writing. Does that answer your question? Yes. So if we consider access time, modification times, would the data clusters for A also be modified? Yes, because we modify the directory entry for B. Okay, other questions? Okay, so let's consider a different case. So let's say A, B, C.txt already exists, and now I'm going to truncate it from having something in it to be 0 bytes long. And same question, which things change? And again, ignore modification timed updates. We don't care about those. Who'd like some more time? Okay, so let's say, who thinks we need to modify the fat entries for A's clusters? The fat entries for B's clusters? Okay, the fat entries for C's clusters? Okay, pretty good consensus. And why we're doing that is that we want that instead of having this pointing to the next thing, we want it to say free. Right, so it's free, and we want the same thing with each of the other cluster. Each of the clusters in the file needs to say it's free, not that it points to another cluster. Okay, how about the data clusters for A? Another one, okay, data clusters for B. Okay, most, but not everyone. And the data clusters for C. Okay. I should probably write down answers we have so far. So we definitely want the fat entries for C.txt. So can someone tell me someone who thinks we need to update the data clusters for B, why do we need to do that? Yeah. Yeah, so we need to do it because we need to change the size. Because that happens to be stored. So we have a size, and that's going to be what we update in the data clusters for B. We also are probably going to update the next cluster. We might update the next cluster to point to nothing. So, comma, and also point to something that indicates. Okay, so we got the fat entries for C. So the data clusters for C.txt. So I think your notion is, we aren't using these anymore. Don't we have to do something? So they're going to be overwritten anyways if we reallocate this. So typically, an OS will not update the data clusters for C. We could. It's not like insane to do so. But usually, an OS won't do that because there's no real benefit to doing it beyond making sure the data isn't recoverable, which maybe you care about, but usually we don't. Because by updating the directory entry and the fat, we've already made sure that space is reusable later. We don't need to change what's in it. It doesn't affect whether we're going to be able to use it again later. So questions? Yes?
What exactly, better question is, how do fat entries and data clusters play together?
Question, how do fat entries and data clusters? So fat entries tell you where's the next part of the thing that's in a data cluster. Does that answer your question? And I guess, as a special case, if the data cluster isn't used for anything, the fat entry will tell you that. Other questions? Yeah. Can I explain the size part again? So in our directory entry, one of the things we have is this size field here. And if we truck it making the file be 0 bytes, we have to edit that. And that's not stored in the file's data clusters itself, it's stored in its directory. As part of, you know, as part of the thing that points to the file, we also have, you know, specifies its name, it also specifies its size. Does that answer your question?
Will that be in the fat entries
or the data clusters? That's the data clusters. So this is part, remember, the directory has data. A directory's data is these directory entries. The fat entries only store pointers to other clusters. They can't have any metadata like names or anything like that. It's just a number. Does that answer your question? Okay. Other questions? Yeah.
Since we're not pointing at C anymore, that would mean 0 to 1. Wouldn't that mean we're changing the fat entries for the exponent?
Question, since we're not pointing at C anymore with the green arrows for no, doesn't that mean we're changing the entries fat entries for B? No. The fat entries for B are about the are going to be about About here. And here, like these are our fat entries for B, are those arrows. Because they're about where are the directory entries stored. And the directory entries are just what are the names and starting locations and sizes of the things contained within B. So we're changing the starting locations, but we're not changing where we're storing the starting location. Right, the starting location is still in a different place. The fat entries for B tell us where do we find all those other starting locations and names. And that's not changing. You still seem confused. So the entries in B are like, so the entry in B here, like what the entry in B, that's part of the data for B. So if we were ignoring what B contains, and we just wanted to figure out what data is in B, we'd look at, we'd say, well, B, I know it starts here. It contains this stuff, and that's it. That's what's in B. So those are its data clusters. It happens that those data clusters have a meaning, and that meaning is it's a list of files. But as far as what data clusters are being used for B, that doesn't change, just what we store in them. Yeah, so we're still using the same boxes which represent clusters on the disk to store the directory entries in B. We're just changing what those directory entries are. Other questions? Yeah?
So when we're truncating it, there's still going to be a data cluster for the start?
When we're truncating, is there still going to be a data cluster for the start? I don't think I gave you enough detail to know. Ideally, we wouldn't allocate a data cluster for a 0-byte file. That answer your question? Okay. Other questions? Okay, so let's do third version here. So let's say I move C from B into A. So what thing should change for that? Thank you. Okay, who'd like some? Oh, I guess. Okay, he will still probably need some more time. Okay, if you'd like some more time? Okay, so let's go from the bottom. So who thinks we need to change the data clusters for C? Not many people. Maybe one or two. So one thing we could do, the simplest way of doing this is probably to make a new file C and B in A, and then delete the file in B. And that's like not wrong, but it's not the most efficient way of doing this operation. So, but if we did make a new file like to do this, then absolutely we would have new data clusters and all those things would change. So let's assume we're doing something more efficient than that, even though, yes, that would be a workable way of doing this move operation. And we're going to do the move operation and try not to make a new file in the process and copy the data over. We want to use the existing data. Okay, so how about the data clusters for B? Who thinks those are going to change? And how about the data clusters for A? Who thinks those are going to change? Yeah, so remember the data clusters for B store the directory entries of B. And B has a directory entry which says there is something called C.txt. We need that not to no longer be true. So we're going to need to edit that somehow. And you know, except in some very special cases, the only way you can do that is by overwriting it. Maybe in some special cases we could unlink it from the directory, but probably, realistically, we're going to have to overwrite it. And we also need to add that to A. So we'll add it to A. Okay, so how about C? The fat entries for C.txt clusters. Who thinks those are going to change? Okay, so they indeed aren't. And something which might confuse people is, oh, wait a moment, aren't we changing this pointer to the first cluster of C? But that's not part of the fat. The ones that are part of the fat are the ones after that. And those don't change. The first, second cluster is pointed to by the first. That's going to be the same before and after the move. How about the fat entries for C's, B's clusters? Who thinks those are going to change? Okay. Anyone want to explain why? Okay. Okay, so you're saying, oh, it could change. If it's the case, we could free up a whole cluster by getting rid of it. So yes, it could change in that case. Most of the time it's not. But yes, if we free up a whole cluster, absolutely we'll change the fat entries for B. Most of the time, we're not going to be able to do that. Okay, how about the fat entries for A? Who thinks that could change? Someone want to explain what the reasoning for that is? So you're saying, oh, we could have to make a new cluster to hold C. Okay, yeah. So I get that we. That we definitely need to change DNE, or almost definitely need to change DNE, and we, We definitely change E, right, somehow, or no, oh, right, D is the way, but we almost definitely change D and E, and probably possibly, but rarely need to change the fat entries A and B, the fat entries for A or B. Yeah. So the question is, couldn't we deallocate the entry for C by changing the fat entries? So I agree, we could possibly avoid changing the data clusters for B if we could remove an entire cluster and only the directory entry, the only directory entry in it was for C. But a cluster is much bigger than a directory entry, so usually we'll have a whole bunch of other directory entries we don't want to get rid of alongside it. Does that answer your question? Why would it work for the previous example? So if c.txt was the only directory entry in a cluster, then yes, we could just eliminate that cluster, and we wouldn't need to edit any of the data clusters. We just change the fat to not point to it anymore. Does that answer your question?
So A and B would work in like edge cases where you're either at a full cluster or just a bigger
yeah. Like the question is, A and B are only going to happen in edge cases? Yes. Yeah, only when we're just at a full cluster or nearly empty cluster. Okay, so let's do one last thing. So let's say here I have a directory of 230 kilobyte files. So how many clusters, and remember each cluster is going to have a corresponding fat entry, so how many clusters do I need to dedicate to this? And let's ignore space in the fat, right? Just clusters that you can store data in. So. Someone want to get me started on this first question? What's a good first step? Yeah. See how much space I actually need for the files. Okay, so let's start with the space for the regular files. Okay, so we have 200 of them. And how much space do we need for each one? How many clusters? You say 15 clusters? Yes. So 30, assuming kilobytes is 10 to the 10 bytes, then we need exactly 15 clusters to store their data. Files times 15 clusters per file. Okay, so that's the space for the files. So what's the next thing we need to worry about? Is there any, yes? Directory entries. So what do we know about the directory entries? So we have 200 directory entries, one for each of the files, and we know they're 32 bytes from the question. So that gives us 6,400 bytes. Okay. So how many clusters does that take up? Yeah. So you're saying four. Okay. So how did you get four clusters?
200 times 32 is 64.
Okay, so if we do the direct division, we get like 3.125. And we can't actually use 3 1/8 of a cluster, because once we use 1/8 of a cluster, it can't be used for anything else. It's dedicated to that directory. We have no option to use it for anything else. So that's going to become 4 clusters. So the total here is 200 times 15 plus 4. Questions on how I came up with that answer? Yeah. The question is, the 200 times 15 parts for the actual files? Yes, and their file data.
The 4 is just for like...
For the directory, and for the question, the 4 is for what? The 4 is for the directory entries that point to those files, specify their names, their sizes, and so on. How did I get the 4? I learned that there were 200 times 32 bytes worth of directory entries I needed. And those that took up, therefore, 6,400 bytes. And I said, I need more than 3 clusters to store that, so that's going to be 4, even though I'm not using most of one of those clusters. Question, each file has its own directory entry? Yes, because you remember we need to store a name and a size in a first cluster. Directory entries are the only place we can do that. Other questions? Yeah?
It's 215 clusters because 30 kilobytes approximately.
It's 215 clusters. The 30 kilobytes is exactly 2048 times 15. Assuming a kilobyte is 1,024 bytes. And if it's not, well, remember, let's go to the next question. So we have 3 kilobyte files. How many clusters do we need for each one? 3 kilobyte file. So people are saying 2. So even though 2 clusters is 4 kilobytes, like way more space than we need, we don't have an option of allocating anything between 2 and 4. So we have to give 4 kilobytes for each file. So we'll end up using, for these 2,000 files, we're going to end up wasting 25% of our space that we allocate to them. And that's just what we have to do. Okay, so questions? Yes?
So the fact that fat entries are 4 by each didn't matter?
The fact that fat entries are 4 by each didn't matter? Yes. Like, it didn't matter for the number of clusters and entries we use, yeah. Because we don't have, like, fat entries aren't stored in files or directories. Other questions? Good. So let's roll.